Okay, welcome everybody to an evening of Q&A with NLP experts Rex Sykes and Jonathan Altfeld. Thank you very much, guys, for showing up and
Thank
for being
you.
Part of this historic event, the experts at NLP. Now, I just want to preface a little bit of this, this teleseminar with some with how I got interested in Rex's work. I had done a number of recordings with like this type of teleseminars with a friend of mine, with a trainer that I consider a mentor and now a friend, by the name of Mark Cunningham. And one of the last calls that I did with him, and I did a number of them, one of the questions was who was his influences in the work that he does, and I had taken a lot of classes with Mark, and I pretty much knew, you know, where he had gotten his trainings, or so I thought, and I was really surprised when he mentioned Rex's name as one of his major influences. He said he was sitting in this room during, I think it might have been another trainer, major trainer's class, and I think he said he was sitting next to this guy who seemed, you know, very laid back and very unpresupposing, I guess, or just very, you know, nonchalant. And I think he said he was called up to the front of the room to do a little presentation, and it was like state control bonanza. And he mentioned it was Rex Sykes. He went up there and he just changed his state like 180 degrees, and his presentation was extremely professional and extremely desirable. I mean, he just latched onto everybody's brainstem and just dragged them into his world during his presentation. So I became very interested in speaking with Rex and getting more information about Rex. And then subsequent to that, I was on a training with Jonathan, and Jonathan mentioned his name. Now I have two of my mentors, two men that I really look to for answers in the hypnosis and NLP realm, that recommended Rex. So when I heard that Jonathan was bringing Rex out of mothballs, I peeked up and perked up, and I really wanted to get more info about it, and that's why I brought and asked Jonathan and Rex to be interviewed for this session of Q&A.
I don't think Rex was being pulled out of mothballs. He's been incredibly busy doing filmmaking and entertaining and doing corporate presentations for the past, 12, 13 years.
Well, good. Excellent. But it was very difficult for anybody else outside of his specific corporate market and the,
yes,
the film world in order to, you know, to take advantage of this. So, Jonathan, you've done us a great service by bringing him out.
I appreciate that, but the service is really going to be it's more like a gift rather than me doing a service. Not only are other people getting an opportunity to hear from and about Rex now and also have the opportunity to train with him in November, but I get the opportunity to train again with him, you know, from both the student and hopefully co-trainer perspective here. So we all have quite a treat in store.
Yeah. So it sounds great. So I know that Jonathan has been doing some fantastic training. He has real-world applications for NLP, which I love, because NLP can get, you know, in my mind, can get very, very technical. And sometimes I have difficulty seeing how I can apply it in the real world at times. But Jonathan takes it right into the real world. He lets you experience certain things. I did a class with Jonathan on humor, And we went right into modeling comedians, which was really it was a really great little practice, which I really thoroughly enjoyed, and the whole class enjoyed it, and everybody was having fun. We were all laughing at our own comedic skills, which, you know, prior to that, we might not have had, or had as proficiently. So it was really. Really, really cool. Once again, the applications of using hypnosis in the real world. So, if you guys have anything you want to say about where you've been or what you've been doing, you could do so now, and then I'll just get into the questions.
Why don't we maximize the opportunity for your attendees and your list members to ask questions of. Presumably mostly Rex, and if I can chime in here and there, I certainly will. I do know that Rex's voice is a bit strained. He's got a mild case of laryngitis. He's here anyway, which is, again, a gift to us. I'll try and pick up whenever his voice gets a little strained.
All right, well, I've got a bunch of questions that people have sent in, and then
Great.
We can open up the lines and if any other questions from the people that are listening. So Marcel wrote, I'd like some clarification on using metaprograms. She wanted to know what your thoughts are on doing hypnotherapy on someone whose English is their second language, and if you think that's not an issue, what proficiency level do they need to be?
Well, good question. Rex, do you want me to start? Would you like to start?
Uh-oh.
Is Rex still on the line?
You know what? Let me check something.
Okay.
Am I muted?
Rex, are you on the line?
Can you hear me?
I can now.
Now we can.
Yeah, I've been trying to get a word in edgewise. You guys just won't shut up.
Okay.
That's
what I'm going to do is I'm
seeing how you go on and on and
Rex,
you put me on mute. Thanks.
I did, because you called in on the wrong line. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to mute everybody, and what you need to do is press *6 to unmute your call after I mute everybody.
I do?
Okay? Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. I called in on a line that you sent me on Facebook. Did I call the wrong thing?
No.
Am I unmuted?
Yes, you are.
You're unmuted.
All right. I thought it was the most amazing thing. I was sitting, you know, when you started, you said, I'm going to mute everybody. I heard muted. I heard muted, and I went, hello, hello. And I was suddenly, it was like, I thought, wow, he did it by voice command alone, too, on top of it. It's like, with godlike powers, mute, and everybody's just silent. I was like, oh, wow.
And poor Rex has laryngitis, and he's probably screaming on the line going, can you hear me? Can you?
I sat very quietly, actually. I was, like, enjoying it and wondering how I could ever live up to that kind of introduction that you provided me. And you brought back fond memories of Mark and, of course, Jonathan and earlier days. And I want to say something about the Mark Cunningham experience. I don't know if I remember... I think before we went, I think that was a little encapsulated. I think what we did was we had a dinner meeting, and we were all at dinner one night, and then the next morning I got up and talked and did a seminar day or something. Maybe it's otherwise, but I live by the motto of, you have ninja powers. And one of them is invisibility, that you can turn on and off whenever you want to. I think one of the problems with celebrity and or heightened ego is that you have to have a spotlight on you all the time. And if you do that, you can't live the kind of life you might wish to live, like with family and friends, and have those quiet and peaceful moments. So I'm usually just a schlep sitting in the back somewhere without any energy or any attention. You know, and then they say, oh, that's Rex Sykes. And they go, that is Rex Sykes. And they go, yeah. They go, well, he can't, how's he ever going to even stand up? He looks like he can't even stand. I mean, you know. And then I get up and I do what I'm supposed to do. you know, and that's control the room with state, you know, my state being first, trying to invite people to join me in that so that we can all move together, kind of all rowing the boat in the same direction, you know, and that takes an incredible amount of energy, but you don't want that energy if you're having dinner with friends.
Sure.
So it's learning when and where to utilize states, utilizing your attitudes, knowing you can turn something on and up. And you know where this came from for me was acting, because as an actor, I would see people who would, the director would go cut, and they would get off the set, and they would still be in character, you know, and maybe they're playing, you know, some horrible person. And so now they're walking around playing a horrible person to the people who are bringing them coffee and tea and the, you know, the wardrobe mistress and everything else, because they have to stay in character. And I went, you know, I want an on and off switch. I want to be able to turn it on when they say action and turn it off when they say cut. I don't want to have to spend 3 or 4 or 5 months. If it took you a year to make a movie, would you want to spend a year being a miserable person because that's the kind of part you're playing? I think not. Mm-hmm. So to me, what it means and why I go this far is to say that anytime anyone has a skill or an ability or a talent, the question becomes is knowing the wisdom to use it and when to use it and when not to use it so that you can have what you want in all sorts of places. Now, if I'm sitting around with dinner and I want to entertain my friends, I can bring energy up like that like anyone else can. If I want to look like the little schlep in the corner that nobody recognizes, I can do that too, and hence the ninja art of invisibility. And
I like that.
All of NLP to me represents that. I mean, not that NLP has anything to do with that, but that's how we should approach NLP, is there's a time and a place to do, and there's a time and a place to not to do. And knowing the difference is where wisdom comes in.
Lovely.
And having the ability to turn it on and off is really key, like accessing the switch that most people don't
yep.
even know is there.
So thank you for that little, I guess, prelude. There was a question that I didn't hear all of it because we were in the process of muting and unmuting.
Okay. Marcel wrote, I'd like some clarification on using meta programs. And she also wanted to know thoughts about doing hypnotherapy on someone whose English is their second language. And if you think that it's not an issue, what proficiency level do you need to be?
Well, let's try to take, this is like three questions, and we'll try to take one at a time. He wants some clarification on meta programs.
Yeah, that's what Marcel wanted.
Okay. I think of meta. I mean, I'll give you like three sentence answer to what I think about meta programs, and the caveat is that ain't all, but it's a streamlined version of it, and it's only an adequate description or an inadequate description of it. They're the rocks in the stream that are sticking out of the water. They are, you know, we hear them as funnels, we hear them as filters. You know, we hear it's strainers. It's where consciousness passes through, and what doesn't pass through the filter, you know, or when the coffee, the water passes through the filter, but the coffee collects inside the coffee filter. It's what we, for whatever reason, first pay attention to, whether they're inbred, whether they're learned, whether they're acquired or whatever. I don't know, and I don't really care. But it seems to be in my world that they are. Elements to which we first respond. And are they changeable? Sure. I mean, we change them in many ways all the time. And or they're not. They're immutable, and we just learn to adjust because of that. I mean, I don't, you know, people will say, I want to change meta programs, I want to do this. Just leave them alone. You know, they're kind of, think of it like that's what God gave you. And if God was smart enough to give it to you, then just live with what you got. But you can enhance and you can diminish them again when the time is right or when it's appropriate. You can accentuate different things or diminish different things. You know, we hear about toward and away, meaning that people move toward the carrot or away from the stick. And if you think of everything as on a continuum, then there's always some degrees in what we're paying attention to. If you're 90% toward, you're 10% away and vice versa. It's what we call sorting styles or patterns. It's how we make sense of our world. And all they are really is a number. You know, there are a number of categories for which a communicator like you or I can learn to pay attention to when other people speak and or behave so that we can then begin to understand them. I think where most people miss things is they think, well, we have these things that we can watch for when they speak and or they behave so we can influence them. And that's, I think, the misuse of the technology, although ultimately that might be what we're doing. It's we're trying to understand somebody so that we can better communicate with them. If you can better understand where someone's coming from, you can walk a mile in their shoes, you can empathize with them. You might say, you know what, you're doing fine the way you are, and I accept you as you are. On the other hand, if there's something other than that, you might say, you know what, you're fine the way you are, and here's where I think some change need be. Or you're fine the way you are, and here's where I think you can enhance something. The issue is this, and here's what the thing for me is with metaprograms. Don't, and I say that purposefully because I know you can't think of a blue elephant and all that kind of stuff, don't get stuck on metaprograms or eye-accessing patterns or anchors or language or anything in NLP. Do treat it lightly and with a sense of humor and with an enjoyment, recognizing that it's a tool to be utilized. It's not your master. It's something that you can use to make life more wonderful. And on top of all of that, there are people who will go, I just found the one metaprogram out of all the metaprograms that makes the incredible difference. Oh, hogwash.
That's such thing.
I just found 15 new metaprograms that no one's ever discovered. Hogwash. It doesn't matter. Here's the thing that really pisses me off about NLP. NLP is supposed to make, in theory, it was supposed to be about helping people change, getting over a phobia, and living your life more productively. It wasn't so that you or I spent the rest of our life trying to discern patterns and find little nuances and become a slave to the technology so that, in other words, what I wanted to do with NLP when I started, not at first, but as when I started my own business in it and was doing seminars, was make it easy for people to do, like what Tony Robbins did. He, you know, Tony Robbins was like, here it is, I'll spoon feed it to you. It's right out of the Gerber's bottle, you know, or the baby food jar. Here it is. There it is. That's it. Well, that's how it should be. That's really how it should be. It should be chewed up so that other people can digest it without having to think about it too much. And what happened in the NLP field is people intellectualized it and said, no, we have to have the next distinction that makes a finer distinction, that makes a finer distinction. So instead of having four things to remember, you've got 64 things to remember. And then you got
and they all want the latest magic bullet, too.
Yep. So having more, you know, is not that, you know, it's just like dinner. You get so much on your plate, and after a while, you're stuffed. Well, if I keep stuffing you, you're going to explode, metaphorically, of course. And the same thing with NLP. You just don't need hundreds and 20, you know, all this kind of stuff. You want it simple. You want it easy. You want it so you can use it so that you make the most of it and make the most of your experience with it. All right. I think I digressed, which is one of the, or went off on a tangent, which is one of the things I'm known to do. As far as
can I add something on metaprograms?
Yes, please,
before we
go
get
ahead.
To the hypnosis? Metaprograms are definitely a small chunk focus. And I have found that, yes, in fact, you can change metaprograms. In fact, attending Rex's practitioner course back in 1997, he was surprisingly effective at getting all of us to live more joyful lives by helping us to, through exercise drills and through repetition, we were conditioned to think differently. And that's incredibly valuable and more valuable, in my opinion, than overanalyzing these things to death. So having the experience is a phenomenally more impactful result. Also, yes, it is still valuable to learn about yourself and to learn about one's own patterns. Rex said something about, yeah, we can change them on occasion, but better to leave them alone and understand ourselves and each other better. I had a friend of mine, a NLPer, call me up and say, Jonathan, I wanted to write you a check. And I said, oh, okay, what did you want to sign up for? And he said, no, nothing. I just want to send you a check. And I need you to agree to cash it if I don't accomplish this particular goal I have. And he wanted to finish a script that he was working on. And I said, so wait a minute, let me get this straight. You want to send me a check that I'm just going to cash if you don't finish your project? And he said, yes. Now, what he was doing was creating an accountability partnership because he understood that he wasn't motivated to finish the script by desire, by being moving towards the result. He happened to be more motivated towards moving away from the absence of some pain. So he created something that worked with his existing meta program. He understood himself well enough to know that by creating that agreement, that he had to finish the script by a certain time or he'd be sending me a check. I'll tell you, it was the best $500 I never earned because he accomplished this great goal and I had this mild role to play in it. It was wonderful. So, just wanted to share that, yes, and it's so much more valuable to understand yourself better and to use what works and rather than focusing on analyzing it to death. So.
Great. So, NLP.
Yeah, that's very cool. Very, very, very cool. Yeah, you know, again, it goes back to you should have one thing you do really well or two or three things you do really well instead of, you know, a dozen or more things you do really poorly. And so it's a matter of imbibe the stuff, learn the stuff, utilize the stuff, you know, but if you miss something, it won't be critical except to the person for whom it's critical. And that will tell them something about their own metaprograms. So, you know, but you could get into an infinite regress on some of these things, and they're really, you know, here's the thing. You'll read a book in metaprograms, and whatever it says, I'm assuming that it's a reliable book, go with it. It may not be that that's, in fact, what everything is and how they are and everything, but it's a way of understanding it. The nuances will come later.
Through your own experiences, through your own practice of it.
Through your own experiences, if you get training and things like that, you know, it's kind of like learn to walk before you run, learn to ride a bike, you know, before you drive a car. You know, there's things that you can do right away, and you can have great effect with them, even if you don't know every nuance. And that's just what I'm trying to tell people. You know, if somebody came out tomorrow and said, you know, I got the one single thing that will make the total difference for you. You know, there would be people who would flock to that because that's the meta program that drives them. I got to have that one thing that's going to put me over the edge. And you know what? They'll spend their whole life doing it. It'll be the same thing because then after that, they'll say, well, I got the next new thing. And they'll go, oh, I got to go to that. So,
Rex, have you used the NLP techniques that you practice? Have you used them with clients while they're in somnambulism, like a hypnotic, you know, deep somnambulist state, as opposed to light trance, that, you know...
Yeah,
no,
yeah, see, I'm a hypnotist as well as an NLPer. I'm a hypnotherapist as well as a... You know, I mean, my background actually before NLP was in hypnosis. So I incorporated approaches of NLP right into hypnosis and hypnotherapy.
Oh, good.
You know, as soon as, I mean, and of course, Milton Erickson, you know, being a prime example of somebody that was modeled for neurolinguistic programming. And I don't even differentiate, frankly. I mean, the things that I could use in a somnambulistic or, you know, in a deeper trance or in a lighter trance, are kind
of
like the same things, huh?
Yeah, that's one of the questions. Gabriel asked, is NLP light trance as effective as hypnosis as we practice it, like with an Ellman induction or a ritualistic induction? And I'm guessing your answer is yes.
Is it yes? Okay. That would be my answer then. I'm about to cough.
While he's getting his voice back, I'll share that I have a very strong belief that conversational hypnosis can be as powerful as, let's say, a more formal classical trance using a well-known structured induction. I have made a study over the last 15 years or so since beginning my own journey with the extraordinary Rex Dykes. With discovering that the same kinds of responses that you would see in people when you're observing your clients doing traditional classical trance work, the same kinds of responses still appear when you do, let's say, a more indirect or, people like to use the word covert, I don't like that word, but a more indirect, let's say, conversational style of trance, the same kinds of relaxation phenomena, the same kinds of signals you would look for in your checkpoints when you're doing induction work, they also appear in conversational trance work. So you can formalize it if that's your style or not. The bigger result is, are you being effective with clients? Can you or do you want to be, or do you need to be creative with your trance work, or can you do fine with more traditional inductions followed by standard procedures? Both work. The bigger point is, are you effectively helping your clients? And if one method that you've chosen to study isn't helping your clients as often as it could, then try something different and keep moving towards what works creatively.
I'm going to add to that. And I didn't hear everything because I had muted the call and I was coughing. I'm going to say that, with all due respect, because I want to make sure that this understand the point that I'm making, and that is, I don't think there's anything in NLP that isn't hypnosis. I don't think there's anything about it that wasn't trance inducing or trance utilization or has some aspect of everything in from traditional hypnosis to modern day hypnosis. All of the tools, everything, were designed to be utilized as trance pieces, whether that was light trance or deep trance. It's about understanding that all communication is a form of hypnosis at some level. It's what you do with that form of communication that makes a difference. You know, we get hypnotized, and some people don't like this, and this is what I said, but we get hypnotized watching television. But we may not be in a state where, because we know it's television, we may not be in the state where we carry out the hypnotic commands that are given us. Although they will say that our brainwaves are altered and that we are in a suggestible state. Well, NLP for me, and the wisdom about knowing NLP, not necessarily NLP itself, but about having that higher thinking about NLP tools and approaches, is that we're all suggestible at all times, we're all hypnotizable at all times, but there are going to be different times and different levels and different things and different places and all that kind of stuff where we might take different approaches. Now, is all hypnosis NLP? No, absolutely not, because the tools of NLP, you could do probably many of the same things, but there was hundreds of years of hypnosis prior to NLP approaches. So what I'm saying is they're both extremely valuable, and I don't think I'm not pitching them against each other. What I'm saying is they're kind of like the same thing. They're different expressions of the same thing, and they have, but it's the wisdom of the hypnotist that makes the difference.
Yes.
if that's what I'm trying to say, it's the operator who's interacting with someone else that determines whether or not the skills are being utilized hypnotically or not. Now, am I clear with that? And have I offended everyone?
Nobody. Well, not me anyway. I can't speak for everybody. And on that note, Nero asked, is NLP, well, he mentions that NLP and covert influence techniques are everywhere these days. He wants to know if you think that they're being overused. He also says it seems like the general public is becoming more aware of and resistant to these techniques.
Yes, I do. I mean, sadly, in many ways, yep. I think it's overexposed. Apologize there. I'll probably go off on a coughing. I do. I mean, there were so many years when NLP, I would watch television, movies, read magazines. Nobody knew anything about NLP. You couldn't find anybody that would ever mention it. I apologize. Now all of a sudden, you know, it's everywhere. Everybody's written a book. Everybody's talking about TV. All the girls are talking about how boys use it to pick them up, and all the boys haven't yet figured out why women aren't, you know, using the same material.
And every third commercial on television has somebody saying, because you, like me, like this solution.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's getting where it's overexposed. So the answer to that is you just got to be more subtle. You can still say, because you like me. You know, it's just that if you say it at the wrong context, you've got to, again, this goes back to being savvy. If you're walking into It's just like, here's a perfect example. Would Wednesday or Thursday be better for our meeting? Everybody knows that it's an old sales technique. It's forcing a choice out of a restricted, you know, dates. There's time frame, so you're pushing the thing. You walk into a major CEO right now or a business person and say, well, that's great. I'd like to get together. Would Wednesday or Thursday be? They go, oh, you know, guys learning this out of a sales book. It's stupid. It's old. It's done. Don't do it. On the other hand, you're really sitting down and you're having a discussion with a friend who happens to be a CEO, and you go, you know, would Wednesday or Thursday work better for us to get together? They might go, well, how about Wednesday at 2? Do you understand what I'm saying?
Sure.
If you approach it like I'm going to manipulate somebody into doing something, then they're going to pick up on it. If you're just being a friend or a colleague or somebody who's adding value to them who happens to say something that they've heard somewhere else, well, we all speak different languages, but we all communicate, so it's okay. You know, if you remember, if you memorize a paragraph of something that 10 people say to one woman, well, after the second time, she's going to be very familiar with it. You know, try it. I recommend go out, get 10 people, give them a paragraph. Go, see that girl sitting over there having coffee? When each one of you walk up and go, hi, my name is Joe, you know, and say the same thing over again. She, you know, obviously her guard would go up. And so people's guard go up when you learn something that's canned and that's not an actual part of you. If you have great rapport with somebody because you genuinely like them, I mean, that's the other thing. You genuinely respect them. You genuinely value them. You genuinely want to add value to them. Then what you do is not a technique.
No.
And the person you're communicating with can congruently feel that.
Right.
Right. Yeah. That's the point. I mean, I think when you do have that rapport, then they're not analyzing what you're saying, or they're just caught up in the moment with you.
Yes, but there's two sides to that coin. When they're not analyzing what you're doing, perhaps that's because you're not analyzing the next 10 things you want to say in parallel or in serial.
Right.
Because you feel the connection,
too.
You feel for them, so therefore your communication is more congruent and authentic, and that's the more important part of it.
Yeah, I agree. That's perfect. So my friend Bob asked a question that is on my mind, too. I read on Jonathan's site that you were involved in as a consultant to the defense and also to the media in some way during the OJ trial. And Bob wanted to know, how did you apply NLP to the jury selection process or to that consultation?
Wow, that's so cool, because my friend John has an answer that I've let him use for years about that. And I'm just kidding, but it's because you do know that there is my friend Bob as a technique.
No, I didn't.
I don't want to ask it, so I'm going to say, oh, you know, my sister Carol said the other day, she was wondering about, anyway, just another use of quotes, but the... it's a fair question. I was sitting in Milwaukee one day. I was here, and actually, I take that back. I was in Los Angeles, and I met with an attorney who was trying to work with the media. Because of the OJ thing, because it would mean, you know, a huge thing to his career, you know, to be part of this OJ trial. I'm not an attorney, so it didn't mean anything to me. And I found the whole of the episode, you know, a tragedy for everyone involved. And but he asked me if I would be willing to consult for him and point things out to him, like if I saw guilty signs. And I said, no, I'm not going to point out guilty signs to you. I go, well, why? You know, he's like, why? And I go, to what end would it be useful? He go, well, I could tell the media that you saw these guilty signs. And I'm like, but that's perverting the system. So Rex Sykes sees these guilty signs. What if Rex Sykes is wrong? You know, how would you feel if Rex Sykes? How would I feel if Rex Sykes was wrong? You know, I mean, so I said, I'm not going to do that. I don't think it's fair, and I don't think it's fair to the families, and I don't think it's fair to O.J. himself in case he didn't do it. He said, well, would you look at some of the witnesses and just tell me about their demeanor, you know? Would you look at, could you, if we could get permission, would you look at the jury? And things like that. I said, okay. Well, as it turned out, this parlayed into, so sorry about that. It parlayed into consulting not only for him, but for behind the scenes for like CNN and MSNBC and Court TV and whatever other whatever shows were going at the time. So I was down in the courthouse. I was on the phone with some of the defense attorneys a couple of times. And fax, I ended up back in the Midwest, and I would fax different things to the defense team and to different people or call or whatever. But it meant that I had to watch the entire trial, excuse me, which I was fascinated with anyway, and I would have anyway. But I really had to watch the trial. And then I also had to watch all of the news shows where they had commentary, because all of the attorneys that were becoming the famous talking heads were talking, and people wanted to know what I thought about them, whether Jerry Spence or Greta Van Susteren or, you know, Roger Cossack, who nobody knows, I don't know whatever happened to him, Dan Abrams, who's still on TV, and people who you now see on national. I mean, it really launched so many careers. I thought that was, you know, being parasitic, not what they did was, but I couldn't do that, so to be in the background was fine for me. But it did mean that I spent, I mean, and then I was back in the Midwest doing trainings. I had 5 or 6 weeks of trainings I was conducting, so I had to train for 12 or 15 hours a day, and then I had to go watch the videos for another, I mean, I hardly slept for 5 or 6 weeks because I was doing video, and then I would be like at lunchtime, they'd be calling me and asking me questions and different times through the day, and after, you know, during a break or something, go out and try and check something. But video at that time, too, was different. Somebody would say, well, you know, 2 hours and 7 minutes into the trial, this is what I noticed. And then you go, okay, now I've got, you know, all this is done on 90-minute tapes at those days. Or, no, I'm sorry, not 90-minute. We had up to 8-hour tapes in those days. So you'd have to go, okay, now I can watch the thing, kind of fast forward, try and figure out on the video player what 2 hours is. It was an incredible amount of boring, laborious work. More detail than you wanted. But so, I mean, there's no glamour in it. The glamour, I mean, yes, I did it, and people, I did comment in different places. But the one thing I would never comment on whether I thought a suspect was guilty or not. I've been asked to comment on the body language of presidents and different people. Do I think they're lying or telling the truth? And in most cases, they just say it's not for me to determine whether they think they're lying or telling the truth. Because the news wants you to say something. All the news wants is another soundbite that they can say, oh, look, here's so-and-so walking away, and this is what this expert said about them. And that's just for their news cycle. It does nothing for the person who you're commenting on. It does nothing for you as a commenter other than to make you maybe controversial and give you a career if that's what you want. It does nothing for their families. It does, you know, it doesn't really illuminate anything to have somebody come on and in 3 minutes or a 30-second news piece comment on what you think. I mean, I can't stand the body experts I see on TV. I'm so glad I didn't go that way. And it's all so stupid. It's all such general. It's, oh, well, they're standing that way because they're, you know, and I'm like, oh, come on, please give me a break. But they won't. Yep. They'll keep bringing it on. And you know what? But prior to the OJ trial, you didn't see many body language people. You didn't hear, again, it's one of the things that this is how TV changed. Now they'll get somebody who you don't have a clue who they are. Or a lot of now is jury consultants, because jury consultants for the OJ trial and stuff became a big thing too, how to pick a winning jury.
Let me add something here, that while Rex has too much integrity to throw judgments that are supposedly that many people will take, whether in the media or, you know, or listening to a call, would take as equivalent to or better than a jury's decision, I will say this. Having watched Rex demonstrate calibration skills and then had the pleasure of being trained by him to improve my own calibration skills, I will say that when we finally started watching videos at the end of our practitioner training back in 97, the things that he was pointing out to us and the things that we were observing changed significantly. So while he wasn't making judgment for us, he was training us to be better at making our own judgments. And that is so much more valuable than getting a sound bite. So the calibration skills were amazing.
So what in those calibration skills, Andrew asked, what are some of the other ways of reading a person other than eye accessing cues?
Well, let me jump in and say something here just briefly. The eye accessing cues is two things. Number one, often very poorly trained, and number two, often misinterpreted.
Mm-hmm.
And there's far more than just that. And being trained in such a small chunk way of analyzing anything is distracting you from the bigger picture. Rex taught me to open up my senses, to see, hear, and feel more, and to shut off my analytical mind and to capture more of what was happening and to get a more congruent sense of everything and how it all worked together, to get a sense inside myself while I was observing, feeling, and listening to all of the verbal, paraverbal, and nonverbal signals. And sometimes we would experience a mixed state where there was some form of incongruence. Identifying that is much harder than knowing that there's incongruence there. So making a decision or a judgment that somebody is lying or that somebody is hiding something is harder to do than to know that something is, let's say, askew. And any focus on such a small chunk piece of it, and I understand that, you know, the person wants an answer as to whether eye access cues can be useful. And the answer is yes, they can, if you know what to look for in terms of in concert with other things. But just looking at eye access cues as evidence of anything is this side of useless.
And here's the other thing. No, that's an excellent answer. There's another way to think of it. So I've worked with police. I've worked with the military. I worked with DEA and a number of different things. And, again, it goes back to your specific purpose. I did a TV show recently where I worked with homicide investigators, and so I'm acting in this show, but I'm every moment I have that I get to work with the homicide detective, I'm like, oh, so tell me about what you do. How do you do it? What do you do? What's important to you in that moment? You know, I'm trying to really pick his brain. And so when it would come down to the interrogation scenes, he would say, well, this isn't how we would do it. We'd be positioned here because we want the client, we want the guy to feel, or the suspect to feel a certain way, or we want them to feel closed in on it. The downside of NLP is somebody reads a book and then immediately becomes a police interrogator, and that's not what NLP is supposed to be. Yes, that's how it's been presented many ways and many times, and that's what some people seem to value. Like, I can tell if you're lying or not, you know, by the flick of an eyebrow or a flutter of an eyelid or something. That, you know, to me, you know what? I'd rather tell everyone that that's a load of horse crap than to have them all run off trying to find it. Because I'll lie to your face, and you'll believe me, you know, and all that kind of stuff. The point is that, or I'll tell you the truth, and you won't believe me. The point is that if tomorrow you had the most advanced sensory acuity in the world to tell what everybody was doing and thinking, whether you're lying or not, you would live the most miserable existence this side of the sun. There would be nothing about it that would be exquisite for you, because everybody would be reduced to whether they were truthful or not truthful, whether they were insane or not insane, whether they liked you or didn't like you. You could never be lovably deceived, and that would be the most boring, sad, awful thing. And then somebody's out there going, oh, but not for me, because I'd figure out how to use it with, you know. The point is that everything is about batting averages. You don't have somebody who's the best batter in the world still strikes out hundreds, thousands of times in their career. You know, the best boxer still gets punched an awful lot. You know, everybody, it's not you're 100% or you're 50% and, you know, nothing else. It's that you are able to enhance your abilities to look and observe people. Why? Again, here it comes. Unless you need to know the truth, like an interrogator does, or a DEA agent needs to know somebody's hiding something, or law enforcement or something like that. You don't need to be a lie detector. Yes, it might be nice to know if your kids are lying, but you probably could tell anyway, you know, or if your spouse, all right? But if that's all it's about, then you're missing the boat. The point of calibration, the whole reason I'm going to give this away and I don't want to give it away. The point is for you to pay attention, and I say that not because I'm holding something in reserve, but it's a better teaching point to have in a classroom than to get over the phone. But the point is this. It's the aha that a person has to have, not to be giving it out in a sentence, and that's the only reason why I hold it in reserve. But the point is it's for you to pay attention to other people, to observe them, and to notice, you know, and then to notice if you look at it this way. The best calibration skills you could have are to notice how someone's standing and how someone's breathing, not the great intricacies of all of that, and then stand like them and breathe like them. Tilt your head a little bit like them, blink when they blink, inhale when they inhale. When they speak, you speak at their rate. You know, when they look up, maybe you look up. And if you do that for a while, what you learn is a sensitivity about what other people do, and two things are going to occur. One is you're going to watch them and get a better mental understanding maybe of what they're going through, and two, you're going to get a visceral, you're going to get the feeling of what's going on, you know, inside them. And it may or may not be comfortable for you, because if you're going to walk a mile in somebody else's shoes, those shoes may be tight. They may be too big. There may be rocks in them. But the idea of having rapport and calibration skills is to have better rapport, meaning greater empathy, to be in sync with someone else so you can understand where they're coming from, so that if they have a problem, you understand where they are in the problem, and that you might be able to lead them to a different set of choices. But you don't lead them the way you lead a horse. You guide them and hope that they make the choices that are wisest for them, or you present it. And if you present it in rapport, they're more likely to accept the choices that are being presented to them. If you try and force them to take it, then you're breaking rapport. Now, all of us go in and out of rapport all the time. Flirting is about breaking rapport and having rapport and breaking rapport and having rapport. People who break up and get back together and break up and get back together have this tendency to be kind of addicted for a while with each other. It's this love, it's this give and take that goes on in life. And because you don't want to just be a rapport hound where you're sitting there matching everybody forever. You got to be yourself too. But the ability to be able to do that, to create this kind of empathy and understanding, and if somebody else knows that your interests are in you, their interests are in your heart, if that's what they perceive of you, well, then, you know, you've overcome thousands of issues right there. You know, people say, yeah, I've always said this, people say yes to the people they like, you know. People say yes to people they like. This is known, all right. And if they like you, they're more likely to say yes. And they say, well, why doesn't my wife say yes to me more often? It's because she doesn't like you in the moment you ask. She may love you, but she doesn't necessarily like you in the moment you ask. You know, why? Maybe it's the way you approach. Maybe it's the way you ask. Maybe it's the way you expect, or maybe you ask 50 times. So it's about learning how to inside of your own skin, be comfortable and to learn different behaviors that allow you to come out of what you typically do so that you're not limited by what you do, but that you're able to expand the range of the things you're able to accomplish and the things you're able to appreciate, the things you're able to enjoy and influence, you know, and the number of people you're able to communicate with. It's about making the sphere of your own existence bigger and better and more enjoyable. Mm-hmm. That's what calibration skills should be about. But, whatever, how do I get to tell if this guy's lying or not?
Great answer. And what I'm hearing is that the class, the training that you do, is more about recognizing in yourself what you kind of already know. That you're getting feedback from them and recognizing how you respond to that feedback so that you can do something with it. Is that partly correct?
Yeah, and if you're a hypnotist, you know what, you know, to whatever extent you know calibration. As you watch people go from, if you want to call it stages, or apologize for the coughing again, but as you watch people deepen their experience in the trance state, you are calibrating the changes that are going on, and you know how you do that the best? Through doing it a lot, you know, through having the experience of seeing
right.
what happens when different people do it, what happens to their breathing, and what happens to the facial muscles and the skin tones and the amount of moisture on their skin and tension in their, you know, that kind of thing. So you learn calibration skills. You know calibration skills already, so we all do to some extent. What we do in a training is kind of bring your attention to it. So you go, oh, geez, I didn't realize I could do that. Oh, that's cool. Okay, now I notice these things. All right. And then try and say, all right, now here's the use that you should do as a superpower being, you know. Use your skills for good. You know, don't major, you know, don't use them for petty purposes.
So I got there's a question here from a couple of more questions.
Is this from Bob again?
What's that?
I was
this
kidding.
Is from
I
your friend Bob.
Floyd asked, you know, and I'm getting a sense that it's not we're going to be learning techniques, but it's not really so much about the techniques. It's about interpreting what's going on around you, and knowing how to move that in the direction you want to where some is an outcome that both you and your client wants to achieve. But Floyd asks, because there's so many techniques that you obviously do know, and you've trained all of these techniques and worked through so many of them. He wants to know if there's any kind of a rule of thumb of how you figure out which to use at any particular time for situations.
Well, one of the caveats of NLP is behavioral flexibility. And so it's much less in our interests. I'm hoping I'm speaking for Rex here when I say that between the two of us, it's much less in our interest to train one rule of thumb that is always relied upon in a given context, and much more valuable to train calibration and awareness skills, self-awareness and awareness of other, and a sense of flexibility and a state of confidence that even though we may not know what next to do in any given moment, we have the flexibility and awareness to be gifted in our own richness. And we do that, certainly I can speak from the student perspective when I was in Rex's class, and I hope that I'm accurate in the trainer role as well in saying that our aim is to shape hearts and minds to be more effective at what they want to accomplish. Rex?
I concur. I'm having a coughing spell here. Let me get back to my coughing, and I'll be right back. So carry on. You're doing
great. So I know it's valuable to have some sense of confidence that if X happens, that I'll know what to do. If X happens, then I'll do Y because that'll get the result. Our hope is to get you skilled and flexible enough and confident enough in your ability to manage what happens and to encounter unusual situations and to have the creativity and flexibility to do whatever is needed, even if it doesn't match a specific technique. I will tell you that when for those who may not know, as a trainer of NLP, I was not a trainer of NLP when I first met Rex. I was a newbie who was absolutely fascinated with watching Rex at the front of the room, much like the description that you got from Mark, although Mark was well more experienced in hypnosis and hypnotherapy than I ever was. So my observation was that rather than aiming to have just one technique that always worked, that to have a sense of fascination with observing people and applying what we knew in some creative way, that was the gift, more so than having a set of techniques. Now, I finished Rex's practitioner course, which is 14 days at a time. Oh, boy, the economics of training these days, I would love to be in 14-day trainings more often. They're extraordinary. And I flew out the day after Rex's practitioner training ended to start up with Richard Bandler's master practitioner. And the way Richard was running his master practitioners at the time, he was doing practitioners and master practitioners at the same time, except the master practitioners would show up 2 days in advance of the practitioners. And so what I found was that amongst all of the other master practitioner candidates, that I was far better prepared to handle whatever came up than the other candidates were. Mm-hmm. And I can only point to Rex as a source of that. There's no other source. I was just far better prepared. I'd had some other training. I'd attended a few weekend courses, and I'd studied like crazy from the books. But it was Rex's tutelage and his mentorship that provided the experiences that enabled me to become more creative than I'd ever thought I could become. I hadn't even envisioned it at the time. So without question, I think Rex and I would agree that our philosophies are to provide an experience that enables people to grow significantly, way beyond the desire for a recipe and a sense of confidence that that one recipe in a given context is going to work.
I do agree with that. And I will. Do we have time? Or are we out of time? Or? Are we there?
Mark?
Yeah. Yes.
Do we have time for Rex to continue?
Sure.
Oh,
okay.
Well, no, I agree. I mean, in other words, it's always going beyond whatever technique there is. Having said all that, or whatever recipe, a recipe can be important. You know, if you want to bake a chocolate cake, you need to do it in a certain sequence and with the right ingredients and cook it for a certain amount of time to get the cake that you want to have. So, yes, there are things that are sequence-based and sequences that you might want to learn in the same way that, you know, you can pick up a knife or you can, you know, a kitchen knife, or you can pick up a scalpel to do brain surgery, and it's going to make a difference. But again, these are metaphors or analogies that point towards something but aren't necessarily actuality. I mean, an analogy is designed to enlighten you to a way of thinking, not to say that's how truth it really is. So again, while there are techniques and approaches in NLP that are worth learning, just as there are in sports and how to bat properly and all those kinds of things, the ultimate batting is not the person who sits there and thinks about it, but the person who's swung the bat properly the right way enough times so that they can do it without having to think about it, so that they can connect with the ball almost intuitively, as opposed to going, okay, I lift the bat, I keep it as many inches off my shoulder. That's the learning stages. And so in training, we do sometimes give you steps for procedures and all that kind of stuff. My goal as a trainer is not to say is not to treat you so much like children to say that you couldn't take those or learn those steps out of a book or that you couldn't learn them on your own, but to help put these different approaches or techniques in a context or within a larger context that says, and this I've told my students for years, what does it, I'll ask the question here, and it's a rhetorical question, and then I'll answer it just because I want to, but typically I wouldn't do that, but what does it mean to be stuck? If someone's stuck, what's going on? Or not going on? You know, what's lacking when someone's stuck? I mean, there's a number of different, what does it mean to be stuck? It means that there's no productive movement. In other words, if I'm stuck in the snow or stuck in the mud and my tires are spinning, it means that they're not properly contacting with the ground in a way that provides enough friction for that to be pulled out of the mud or the snow. So what needs to be done? Some form of movement. Either the ground has to come up or the car has to go down, you know, or somebody pulls it out with a chain from the outside or pushes it from the back. But in other words, when people are stuck, if you just keep a principle in mind, you need to create movement. You will figure out that what all of the techniques you have or all of the different tools you have, what can I do to create movement? Maybe you take them for a walk and talk to them. Maybe that's all that's required. But get them moving. You get them moving in mind. You get them moving in body. You get them moving emotionally. You get them moving in spirit. Now, I'm not saying that that's enough for everything. I'm not saying, but it is, frankly. But it, I'm not saying that we'll go out and get some fresh air. 99% of your problems, for most people, will dissolve with good old common sense. Go out and dig in the garden for a while. you know, and you'll get over your anger or your depression if you push yourself to. A lot of it's true. You know, the media and the pharmacists and the doctors and the big, you know, conspirators and all that kind of stuff, you know, who just want to separate people from their cash have convinced them, no, you can't do that without the right medication, without the right procedures, without the right medical thing, without the, you know, proper know-how. You've got a disease, which until they labeled the disease wasn't a disease, it was just an issue. So, I mean, it's creating movement. It's creating movement in people. That's how you get people inspired. That's how you get people to change, is to create movement in them. And the tools, the techniques, the, you know, are part of that, but they aren't the answer. They are less of something that you need to know about than the umbrella that all these things fit under. And the wisdom, because again, it comes through wisdom, and the recognition and the calibration of what's needed in a moment comes through experience. It doesn't come from me saying, if on Tuesday the person has a nervous breakdown at 3:45, you should use, you know, the technique that's written on the back of page 47 out of manual 3.
That's really cool. You just answered Nicole's question as well. But what I'm hearing is also that you can, you're looking to get movement emotionally, physically, and attitude-wise. So
right, and let me say this to hypnotists: if you hypnotize the people, throw them in the chair, have them make all their changes, and then bring them up out of trance, and they get out of the chair. One of the things you can do is have them get up as if they're out of trance and walk around in the world before they go out in the real world, as if they're awake, having kept the changes.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
Yeah, to rehearse it in the room with somebody. You know, say, oh, so, you know, you're having trouble talking to your boss. Well, talk to me now. You know, wake up feeling like you're awake as opposed to really being awake. But, you know, let's have that discussion. Another rehearsal is valid, whether in trance or out of trance, because by continuum, it's all a matter of degree. So allow people to rehearse their successes. Allow them to rehearse overcoming their fears and phobias. Allow them to interact as if they had, which is an incredible trance to operate from, you know, to look back on what was a problem back then in your past before you came into this room, and notice now how it's different and how it can and will be different in the future. And as you look back from the future to now, realize how incredible this journey has become, and keep what you've learned, you know, as you move forward each and every day. And let them, you know, have that moment. So that way they're just not, I mean, they've had the mental stuff, they may have had the emotional stuff, but they haven't actually had the physical wiring. All the, you know, so if they're just always in a chair, then most things get associated with being in that chair. It's like the trance chair. They can come in and just sit in the chair and go into trance. They know what to do.
Very true. And you actually touched on something very useful there as well. You were giving some examples of some really precise and lovely languaging there, which is one of the best things a hypnotist or hypnotherapist can get from NLP is to learn to be more precise and effective with languaging their suggestions that they give people.
So, David, who must be a friend of yours, I know he's a friend of mine, wants to know when and where your training is going to be.
Well, we're going to be training together, Rex and myself.
That's right. We're both
going to be in the room the entire time. And we're going to be in Orlando. We're doing a 12-day practitioner training, 12 days inclusive. And that's going to be November 2 through November 13. So 12 straight days together. It's going to be an amazing, extraordinary event. Very rare. Hopefully, Rex and I can return some honor to the level of depth of NLP training that people can acquire these days.
Yeah,
it's going to be fun. It's going to be a good time. Come ready to party. But by that, I don't mean raucous. I don't mean, you know, the champagne bottles and the corks and the whole thing are coming off. I just mean the key is to have a good time, to have an enjoyable time. Come because you want to learn something and you enjoy it. Come because you want to add dimension to your life. Come because you got nothing better to do. You want to hang out with some groovy people. That's fine with me. You know, but enjoy it. I mean, come because when you do, it is about changing life experience, and it is about, you know, gaining experience. What I want to do when I train a program is to help provide the person the experience base so that once they leave the training, they can build on that on their own. They've had 12 days. Now, people say it takes, 21 days to make or break a habit. All right, so you haven't got 21 days yet. You had 12. All right, but you're on the road to, and I don't, by the way, that's not really cut and dried in stone. Otherwise, every 21 days, there'd be life-changing events in this world going on. in people's lives, you know. How many people have tried diet for like 21 days and then gone, ah, screwed? Huh?
Often it's 21 sessions, too.
Say that again, 21 sessions?
Often it's 21 sessions, and often I remember at your courses, we would have certain rituals that we would do at the beginning of each session, which was part of that repetition that really counted.
Right. Well, and so that's what it is. It's about building habits, and so we're trying to teach you positive habits that you can incorporate on a daily basis that will make a difference for you. And it's you know, not everybody will do it forever, and some people, I still this day, you know, 10, 15, 20 years later, somebody goes, I do this every single day, and I can't tell you how incredible it is, man. And I'm like, that's awesome. That's what it's all about. But it's about having you see more and experience more and enjoy more when you're having a nice time than when we're constricted and constrained and uptight and worried and focused about our problems. So it's really about learning to focus differently and to focus anew. It's taking a flashlight, naming it in a room, but then expanding the range at which the circle of light is, so that it's not just this narrow circle of light, but so that it can enlighten an entire room. And that's, to me, what the training is about. It's going beyond, you know, just saying, okay, here's five techniques. Go out and learn these techniques.
Absolutely.
I'm
sorry. Go ahead, Mark.
Where can you find out about the training, like on the web?
To find the training, and I hope that you'll also email your subscribers afterwards with the links. They can find the course material, the course information, at my website. It's altfeld.com. That's A-L-T-F as in Frank, E-L-D.com. And if they search for Altfeld Sykes Practitioner on Google, they should find it as well. Mark, would your subscribers like kind of a bonus for spending some time with us either tonight or when they listen to the recording afterwards? Thought we'd extend something.
I don't think so. I really don't think so, Jonathan.
Well, those who already know the event page for the website will know that we've got several different rates that are based on, you know, when someone signs up, and some of those rates are still available, and one of those rates expired on July 31st. So I thought we would extend the July deadline for your subscribers for, let's say, another week. Will that be enough for a recording to be released?
For that be enough for the what? I didn't catch the last part.
Will it be enough time for a recording of this call to be released?
Yeah, I think so. If the recording comes out, I think it'll be fine.
That sounds great. So let's say another week from today, and we'll extend that July 31st deadline. And we've got a couple of different price points based on specific dates.
Well, you better give a date, because depending on when a person gets the...
That's a good idea. So today is August 13th. We'll give until August 20th. How's that? The end of August 20th. And what else did I want to mention about that? There's a couple of different price points. If someone needs a payment plan, we've already done that for a couple people, so just let us know what your situation is, and we'd love to enable you to be there. We'd love to see you.
And I want to chime in and say, not all NLP training is equal. There are different programs out there. Some are good, some not so good. What I like to do is I like to have you come in, and I like to have you learn and enjoy and have an enjoyable learning process. There are some people who prefer to go out and, you know, do the boot camp kind of thing where they get beat up and they get abused and they get hurt and they get pain, you know, no pain, no gain kind of thing. If I'm not hurting, I'm not learning. That's not my approach. I can do it if you want it, but that's just not my approach. So if you like I said, if you want to hang out with some groovy people, learn some good skills, and have a nice time and really get value.
And have a ton of fun.
Yeah, then think again and come join us.
Great. I'm going to see if there's any questions. Anybody else has any questions?
Sure.
If you have any questions, just press star 6 to unmute yourself and say your name and then ask your question. Who's there? Well, while we're waiting, I have another question from Devin, who asks about quantum linguistics. Are you familiar with that?
What about it?
Devin wants to know, what is quantum linguistics, and can you speak using it and explain how it works?
Nope.
Yeah, I'm not.
I answered that a few years ago. Just a joke.
Sorry, you know. Go ahead. Go ahead, John.
No, that was my joke. Answered it a few years ago. If it's quantum,
I don't know. If it's a book that's from a book that's out there, no, I'm not. I can't say if
I'm not familiar with the term.
Have read it or not read it or have it or whatever. So it wouldn't be fair of me to attempt an answer without knowing what I'm discussing.
Sounds like it's moving in the direction of something along the lines of transformational change, transformational grammar. But that may be completely inaccurate. There is a lot of language for change work in NLP.
Well, I mean, you can look at there were a number of books called Verbal Self-Defense, and many, many, many of the patterns were right out of NLP and or other linguistical patterns of which NLP, maybe not had anything to do with, would readily adopt. So, I mean, there are books. It might be a compilation of stuff. It might be somebody else is offering. It might be great. It might not be great. I just have no way of knowing.
Now, Faye wants to know if there's a particular technique in your toolbox that you find indispensable.
Are we still there?
Yeah, we're still here, and the question was about, is there one particular technique in your toolbox that you find indispensable? And I will just chime in and
go
offer
ahead,
my... Sure. I think it's the combination of creativity and flexibility. I was fascinated with individual techniques when I first got started, and over time I learned to elevate above that and to revel in being creative and flexible. Humility counts too. So there's not a specific single technique that I would say is most valuable. I mean, if you ask me, do I have a specific favorite language pattern if I'm doing sleight of mouth, I'm sure I have a smaller handful that I use more often than others. But if I'm losing the forest for the trees, I know I'm not in my element. So I think remaining creative and open-minded and connected is the most valuable perspective for me.
I'm not
right.
quite
Let
sure. Huh?
Go ahead.
Oh, I think I'm not quite sure how to answer that. I mean, if I were putting out a fire, would I have a favorite method of delivering water? Yeah, probably. But if the point was just to deliver water, I'd do it any way I could. You know, what Jonathan said, you know, it's about the flexibility. It's about the thinking, not about the technique. It's kind of like saying, oh, you know, it'd be nice to have a fork, but I could eat with my fingers. I probably need a knife, but I might be able to tear, you know. A spoon, well, I could cut my... I mean, in other words, the technique is nice. It's a shortcut for thinking things out and being able to do things, you know, because it comes kind of ready-made. But as such, it's the old saying, if all you have is a hammer, you treat everything as a nail. And there's functional fixedness in that result. In other words, because of the function, you can't see to do other things with it. Or the form, you can't see past its form or its function. Primarily, I like to be able to take a walk. I like to be able to refresh my mind. I like to be able to think about it. I like to be able to search my own being and my own imagination about, you know, what might I do if this were the situation. I don't in my life sit down and go, all right, well, what technique do I need for myself here? And so I don't really do that with other people. It arises out of, you know, what does the person present? And not everything is the same, and not everything works the same. It's not it's like this. If you kick a dog, the dog might run away and cower. Or you might kick a dog, and the dog might turn around and bite you. You don't really know. Because the dog is living. If you kick a brick, well, gravity and friction, angle and force and all that, you can probably predict where the brick will end up. You can't predict where the dog will end up. I'm sorry, I'm coughing again, but I don't narrow it down to which technique do I like best. I'm sorry.
Mark, shall we let Rex relax his voice?
Yes, I think so. And since Rex, we haven't had any questions, I'm going to call this meeting to an end.
Well, Rex, thank you so much for joining me. And Mark, thank you so much for hosting the call.
I'm thrilled that you guys were able to get on the line here.
Well, I'm very flattered. I'm very complimented that you... Jeez, that's what I thought I could talk. I'm very, very delighted to have been here, and thank you so much for having me.
Oh,
it has been
a pleasure to
talk. I mean, I typically like to see who I'm talking to, you know, but the phone is another way of doing it, you know. I'm honored and I'm privileged and I'm very pleased to have been here. Apologize for all the coughing. But,
I apologize for keeping your voice active.
Yeah, I'm gonna shut up as soon as this phone call's over. I'm shutting up for the night. I'll have to sign language to my children.
Well, Rex, Jonathan, thank you very much. Appreciate it. Good night.
Good night, Mark.
Good night,
Jonathan. Good being with you. Thanks again, man.
Yeah.
Always a pleasure,
Rex.
And Mark, to your subscribers, thanks so much for joining us on the call. Hope you got some good value tonight.
You took your time. Right. I mean, I hope you did. I hope you enjoyed it. I hope you got something from it. So best to you all. Take care.
Take care.
Have a good night.
You too, Jonathan. Take care.
Thank you, Mark.
Bye.
Bye-bye.